And we're going to take your phone calls next with Joshua P. Warren, investigator. Joshua, with these two investigations, the Church of Satan and then the haunted house, any major effect on you personally?
Yes. The idea of, well, let me take them one at a time, I guess. When it came to the Church of Satan, I think that the refreshing thing about doing that investigation was that I was able to actually see the men behind the curtain, if you will. I mean, we have this big, you know, facade of some powerful, evil, sinister force that we associate with, you know, Satanism. And yes, you've got all kinds of wackos and weirdos who are out there committing crimes and saying Satan made him do it. But it was sort of nice to go behind the scenes and talk to the people who are within the Church of Satan and humanize them. And, you know, whether or not we agree with them, whether or not someone, you know, loves them or hates them, I was able to see them for what they really are and present them for what they really are. And then when I turn around and go into this haunted house and have these experiences, it sort of has the opposite effect of giving me this sense of wonder back. You know, in one investigation, it's like taking this facade of wonder and minimizing it down to the individuals who are just as human as you and I are. In the other case, it opened my world back up again when I went to the haunted house and showed me that after all my investigations, and I mean, I've been to between 500 and 1,000 haunted places, and I've traveled around the world doing this for, you know, close to 20 years. This is the first time that I've ever had such an extensive, distinct interaction with an intelligence from the beyond, and it really does make you understand that there is so much more to this world than meets the eye, and it's an intelligence that can connect with humans.
To the phones we go now. Let's go to our first-time caller line, Cedar City, Utah. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, George. How's it going?
Great, hon. Thanks.
I just wanted to tell you a story. Well, first, all right. I have to tell you a backstory. Well, my mom died when I was about 4 years old, and I'm 20 years old now, but a couple years ago, I was just sitting outside my house one night, and I went to my car that was across the street, and as I passed the car that was in the driveway, it was like there was this, looked like a mangled body in the car. And when I looked at it, you know, like the suspense music that you hear in movies?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just like, dun, like really loud. Like, I heard that. So I went to the car, and I got my cigarettes, and on the way back, I looked inside that car again, and it was gone. So I sat down on the porch, and I looked in it again, and it was like just a ghost of my mom was sitting in the car. She didn't say anything. She didn't move. She was just staring at me for like 10 minutes.
What do you think these cases are, Josh?
Well, that's pretty weird. I mean, to see a mangled body and then all of a sudden it's sort of replaced by the apparition of your mother. I mean, there are so many variables involved there. I don't know exactly what to make of that one, but I will tell you that there is something very interesting about cars and ghostly activity, because we often think of a ghost as being something that is the product of a spirit or a soul, you know, a human being. But there are ghosts of cars. There are ghosts of ships. There are ghosts of stagecoaches, as well as the horses pulling them. And I have actually investigated a haunted hearse and a few other haunted cars, and it's intriguing because cars are sort of like big Faraday cages. You know, when that's why you're safe usually sitting in a car during a thunderstorm, because the electricity is going to go through the metal cage into the ground. It has nothing to do with the rubber tires. And so it may be that, you know, your experience was enhanced by the fact that it took place within a car. But aside from that, sounds like, you know, you were experiencing something that was subjective there.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, yeah.
So now,
after you saw the mangled body, you went to get your cigarettes?
Yeah, I was just going across the street to my car, and I passed one of the cars that was sitting in the driveway.
And why didn't you, like, call 911 or something when you saw this body?
Because when it didn't seem real.
Oh, okay.
When I went back, the body was gone. Yeah, It's insane. And George, I have another question for you too.
Sure, Jessica, go ahead.
Last night, you're saying if anybody got the "I'm a fan of man" quote.
Oh, you can't say it. You can't say it.
We
won't let you. We're going to use that again tomorrow. Got a contest going, Joshua. I'm giving out 8 books tomorrow if somebody can guess a phrase, but a lot of people know it, but it's random. So I just pick someone. If they don't know it, you know, another book is added to the weekly question, but people are beginning to pick up on it, but they want to win. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, how you doing, George? Great show.
Good.
Tonight.
Thanks.
I'm a freelance writer from the LA area, and I'm into heavy metal music. I listen
Wonderful.
A lot. I was wondering if your guest found any connection between the Church of Satan and heavy metal music. And also, I was wondering if you had read about or done research into the Norwegian black metal bands of the early 90s who were openly and overtly satanic. There was a lot of murders and church burning. So just wanted to get his thoughts on that, heavy metal music, and the connection between Satanism, if there is any.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a very interesting question from the pop culture perspective. And what I have found is that, generally speaking, using satanic messages in rock music has been sort of like viral marketing in the past. It's true, of course, that many Satanists or many musicians are Satanists because they are able to justify this idea of worshiping the carnal and bringing to themselves whatever causes them the most pleasure. They're able to justify that as being related to the rock and roll lifestyle. But I think they put those messages sometimes in the music just to provide further layers of complexity, so that even after you've heard the song a few times and you're tired of it, there's another layer of interest there. You can go deeper and deeper, and so it adds some value and longevity. It's kind of like people playing, you know, Dark Side of the Moon with Wizard of Oz or something. It's a marketing ploy. As far as the other bands you were talking about being involved with murders and church burnings and all that.
Norwegian bands.
Yeah, it very well may be that there are, you know, devil worshippers out there who would engage in that sort of thing. But I didn't see anything from the members of the Church of Satan that would indicate they would support murdering someone or burning a church. So I think you just have a lot of crazy people out there who are criminals who say, you know, they're associated with the devil, and maybe they are. I mean, maybe there is some being that we have yet to nail down who inspires people to do these things. But ultimately, I think the most important thing is for us to take responsibilities for ourselves and realize that, you know, tons of people go to war all the time in the name of God, but how many people go to war in the name of Satan? You know, people just sort of warp around whatever they need to get the support to either commit evil acts or be excused for evil acts. And the Church of Satan is about, as they put it, responsibility to the responsible. So I wouldn't see a real connection between those types of bands and the Church of Satan.
Could they have been trying to trick you, though?
Oh, it's possible, certainly. You know, anyone can be deceived. And I mean, all I can tell you is that I did my best. I lived with them. I read their literature. I interviewed them at length. I was able to get access to their rituals. And so there is no way that I could ever say, you know, I can't prove a negative, so to speak. I mean, I don't know if this was all just a big snow job and they wanted me to make them look less vile than they are. But I doubt it, because the people I talked to seemed sincere, almost to the point in some cases of being inarticulate, because they were being so truthful about how they felt. And the real essence of Satanism, according to the Church of Satan, is to be yourself. So, you know, they seem to live productive lives. Many of them are very creative people, people who have done well in society. They function well, and in fact, they are advanced through their ranks based upon their productivity in real life and real society. So I don't see that you could really, you know, be out there committing all these terrible acts and at the same time be productive in society. But, you know, there's no way I can ever know for sure.
All right, let's go back to the phones. East of the Rockies. Hello, Robin in Oklahoma.
Oh, hi. George. It's an interesting topic.
Yes, it is. Go ahead.
I was wondering, since they don't believe in an afterlife, Do they believe, you said they take responsibility for their actions, right?
Yep.
But how far do they go? You know, I mean.
Yeah. Well, you know, they only look in terms of their lifespan. I mean, they support capital punishment, and they support the idea. For example, I asked Peter H. Gilmore, the head of the church, how he felt about someone like Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker. Okay, this is a guy who was going around saying, "Hell, Satan, Hell, Satan," and at the same time he was murdering and raping and doing the most vile, disgusting things you could possibly imagine. And Gilmore said that the Church of Satan despises him more than anybody because, in fact, he said that he hoped that Ramirez had broken into the home of a satanic woman who would have shot him and ended his so-called reign of terror. So, you know, I think that they don't necessarily feel as though you must have a spiritual essence or an afterlife in order to get your payback. They want the payback to come here, and they hold you responsible within your physical lifespan.
Yeah, well, I understand what you said about, you know, people going to war in the name of God because there's a lot of injustice.
Yeah.
You know, through the centuries on that. Do they have children?
Well, yeah, I mean, I really avoided the concept of children as much as possible in this movie. I mean, they do have children just like everybody else, but I did not, you know, this is such a controversial area that I didn't feel comfortable, you know, interviewing a child or bringing a young person into this because, you know, this person, this child could be stigmatized later in life if he or she decides that, you know, they don't want to be associated with a movie like this. But yes, I find that altogether, the thing that makes all religions somewhat creepy is that it's very easy for someone to take the concepts in any religion and warp them or manipulate them in order to achieve selfish purposes. And if all they have to do is say, well, God told me to do this, and people believe it, well, what further standard can you apply to that situation? You know, if you believe God told somebody to do something, then and you accept it, it can be abused very easily.
Oh yeah, well I go toward Wiccan, and it's like, you know, you get paid back threefold or sevenfold or something, you know, and it's probably in this life that you got to be real careful about what you do, and you don't meddle with anybody else's life.
Yeah, I tend to agree more with you. I don't know about threefold, but I do believe that there is karma, and I think if you look at it even from a Newtonian physical perspective, for every action there is an opposite but equal reaction, and I do think that everything you do will produce a repercussion for you either in this life or in some other existence after this life, and so my beliefs are closer to yours, and that's one big way I disagree with the Satanists.
What's your take on shadow people? You've heard this on the program here.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Well, you know, I think that shadow people are one of two things. Shadow people are either apparitions that simply have not been able to manifest completely, meaning that, you know, they might be solid, but they've only been able to manifest enough to block a small portion of the light, so they look sort of gray. But what's even more telling is their behavior. Because shadow people are frequently seen around the edges or the perimeters of a setting, and they're sort of spying on us. They're sort of voyeuristic. And when people see them, it often sounds like that, you know, they describe these beings as just watching us, and as soon as you notice you're being watched, well, then they slip away. And because that they are so elusive and because they are so concerned with being seen, I am willing to go out on a limb and say that shadow people may very well be individuals from the future who do not want to be observed because they're afraid of influencing their very existence if we know that they're observing us. So it may sound a little crazy, but it seems sensible that if ever, and I mean ever, we are able to find out how to travel back in time, then we can safely presume that there are people who are doing it, And that, however they manifest, when they come back, they are doing their best not to be noticed, so we won't jeopardize their existence in the future.
Well, that's possible. Wildcard Line, you're up with us. Hello there.
Hi, this is Douglas calling from San Francisco.
Hey, and, Douglas.
Thanks as always for your patience, Mr. Nuri, and it's an honor to speak to Mr. Warren. I used to be a Department of Defense research librarian at the Presidio military base of San Francisco, and one of our chief issues within the Presidio military base was a tremendous infestation of satanic cultic activity that I was assigned to do a tremendous amount of research into because it was such a problem with military behavior. And you spoke of people going to the wars in the name of Satan, and I had to work with one of them personally. His name was Lieutenant Colonel Michael Aquino. He later on became a full bird colonel, and he served in the Gulf War. But before that period of time, he was with the Church of Satan, which was just outside of the Arguello Gate of the Presidio military base. And he used to go to Germany to conduct seances in the former SS Castle of Zevelsberg that belonged to Heinrich Himmler, but the local neo-Nazis lobbied against his performing those rituals in there because they found them so abhorrent. So he actually was with military intelligence, and he was one of the originators of the military branch, totally separate from the CIA, of remote viewing. And he got an enormous amount of funding for that. And the big controversy came in when my high school teacher, who was later arrested for this issue, Gary Hambright, he was in charge of the daycare center at the Presidio Military Base of San Francisco, and all of the children who came into the children's branch of the library, who I also had to work with, it was all part of the same complex, their parents would leave them there to do study activities for school. They began describing horrendous abuse activities.
Have you heard of this, Joshua? We've got to check into this.
You know, I think I have heard of this guy's name. But in terms of the activities that he's engaged in, it seems to me that someone who would do these things, you know, if they're abusing children or, you know, getting involved in some of these other areas that have a spiritual connotation, they're probably not, you know, Church of Satan Satanist. And you know, they would probably fall more into the devil worshiper category. And the reality is, You're never going to be able to go take a camera in and shoot what these devil worshippers are doing, because it would be criminal to even be present. You know, devil worshippers who are murdering people and molesting children and all that sort of thing, those are people who are, you know, they're just plain old filthy, disgusting criminals.
Well, and I want to verify too. You know, I don't want to indict the poor military officer unless you know, he's got an opportunity to talk on his own.
We don't know, and of course it's, but I do know that the Church of Satan has told me they have a lot of members who are in the military, but that you know, that I don't think that necessarily has to conflict or affirm what this guy was up to. But I can see why that maybe being a Satanist in terms of the Church of Satan might be helpful to you as a soldier, because I think, you know, a lot of Christians, you know, the Bible says, you know, thou shalt not kill, and yet all these politicians who send the soldiers off to kill, they all claim they're Christians, which is kind of interesting. But I can see why that the guys who actually are there in the field who are having to kill other people might feel better if they didn't have the thou shalt not kill thing in their mind all the time.
Well, that is a different paradox, isn't it? Back in a moment. Well, tomorrow before open lines, we're going to talk about the other Roswell, a UFO crash on the Texas-Mexico border. It's an incredible story, and then we'll have our special Friday night and the Saturday morning open lines. By the way, I'm going to be doing the Sunday show, first Sunday of every month. I'll be back in a moment. We'll take final calls with Joshua Warren on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We've got Joshua Warren. We've got your phone calls, and we'll go to them right now. Let's go to our wild card line. Dan in Asheville, North Carolina. You're in Joshua's neck of the woods. Go ahead, Dan.
I am. I'm a neighbor down the street from him, just a few cities over.
Super.
I've got a question for him and a statement, something a suggestion for you both. I wanted to ask Joshua what his thoughts were about ghosts and UFOs and their connection potentially to the demonic, And I want to suggest to both of you this UFO experience he does. It would make a great TV show. I would love to see you guys get together and maybe take the UFO experience so we can see the fakes and the reals and teach people how to tell the difference. It just seems like you guys are great together on TV, so I'll listen to you guys off the air.
Well, you are good on TV, Josh.
Well, not as good as you, the master. You are the Emmy holder, but actually, I look too fat on TV. I need to lose some weight before I go back on camera.
Well, you know the old camera adds 10 pounds.
Yeah, but well, that's actually a really good question. And for those who don't know what he's talking about, for the past 3 years, I have done an event called the Speaking of Strange UFO Experience. And it's a free event. It usually happens in August, where we get out in a field way out in the countryside, and we have people come from all over, well, the southeast at this point, and they compete in this contest to build fake UFOs. And every year, the crowd has gotten bigger and bigger, and the idea is to see who can create a UFO that would fool the most people, because we want to learn how to discriminate between fakes and the real thing. And it's been just amazing. I mean, over the years, I have seen so many different types of propulsion used. I mean, almost everything you can consider. I mean, helium, hydrogen, rotors, jet power, hot air. Some people spend thousands of dollars faking these things. And it's just a spectacular thing. And so recently, when this guy claimed that the UFO seen in Phoenix was created by him using flares with helium balloons, I was sort of suspicious of that. I would like to recreate what he claims he did, because it's not easy to take something like a flare, which I believe they weigh about 2.5 pounds, and hook them up to enough balloons. And I don't know, he didn't say he had a weather balloon. I think he just said he had a balloon. And you've got this thing that's extremely hot. So I don't know what he was using to tie this up, because if you're using something, you know, like fishing line, it's going to melt. If you're using something like a metal wire, then it's going to be heavy. It's going to add extra weight. It should heat up the balloons, pop the balloons, and then also as this thing burns, it's going to change its own weight. And you see all these physical properties that change after you watch all these fake UFOs produced every year. And so I would like to recreate the UFO that guy claims he made. But just like Dan said, I mean, it would be wonderful to put this stuff on TV. In fact, if you go to UFOcontest.com, you can see some pictures and video clips from some of our past events and see some of the stuff people have created. But in terms of demonic stuff, there are a lot of people who believe that aliens are demons. And I can see why they would make that, or they would draw that conclusion. I mean, if you have some little men who seem very cold who come into your house at night and drag you out and do horrible experiments on you, I mean, that seems like a pretty demonic act. But I think that's one of the biggest challenges we have with the paranormal, is that different people interpret the same things in different ways. What one person calls an alien, another person calls a demon, or what one person might call an angel, somebody else will call a ghost, and so on.
That's life, Joshua, you know?
Yeah, well, that's true. And then I've started calling them paratemporals, because they are, whatever they are beyond our current concept of the species present. See, time plays an integral, crucial role in all these things, because time and space are related. And this might be for another show, because we could talk for hours about the hypothesis I have related to time and space and these various entities. But so far, I mean, if you're going to consider an alien a demon, well, then I think that's probably more realistic than thinking there's some little horned being that's going to pop out of the nether realm and perhaps persuade you to do terrible things.
Wildcard line, Marie in Chicago. Hi, Marie.
Hi, George. Hi, Joshua. I had an experience with a ghost similar to Joshua's, wherein the ghost was and I were interacting, and I was asking questions, and the entity was responding to my questions with knocking. And I was like kind of excited when I heard Joshua talking about this, because something very similar happened to me when I was young. And it started when a friend and I were playing with a Ouija board, and We befriended this entity that we were in contact with, and we tried to conjure up another entity, and we did, and we were standing in a dark room, and I asked the question. I said, if there's anybody here with us, please knock, and it did, and then I started asking yes and no questions, and it would respond in kind. We went back to the Ouija board, and this is going to sound a little weird, but I promise you that every word that I'm saying is absolutely true. Went back to the Ouija board, and the entity spelled out that it was going to kill my mother that night.
Oh, my. Jeez.
Yeah. Well, I went home that night, and, you know, I didn't think too much about it, and I was sitting on the couch with my mom, and she fell asleep, and I was watching TV. Actually, the Marx Brothers Duck Soup was on. down the hall in the dining room, I started hearing the knocking again. And when I first heard it, I, you know, thought I was imagining things, but it kept on happening. And then it moved in from the dining room into the living room where I was sitting. And, you know, for the entire time, you know, for about an hour or so, it was knocking on the walls in all different spots. And finally, my mom woke up, and she and I went to bed, and she fell right to sleep. Well, it moved into the bedroom with us, and it proceeded to knock on the walls for hours, and I couldn't, of course, go to sleep. I was scared to death, and then all of a sudden it just stopped, and it just became eerily quiet, and I also had a headboard, and then right by my ear it went boom, 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 and I almost...
Here we go again. Yeah,
almost jumped out of my skin. And finally, the sun started coming up, and I couldn't keep my eyes open anymore. And I put my arm around my mom, and I fell asleep. And this is the really twist to the whole thing. The next day, I went back to my girlfriend's house. I told her this story. And we pulled out the Ouija board, and I asked the question. I said, why didn't you kill my mother last night? And so help me God, it spelled out, because you watched over her.
Oh, my gosh. All right, Josh, how do you explain that?
Well,
thanks for
the call. Remarkably similar to my experience. There was no Ouija board involved, of course, in my experience, but everything else sounds incredibly similar. And, you know, I've talked to so many people who have told me that they've been with a loved one who is about to die. And that loved one says, there is some figure here who has come for me. That's where the popular idea of death, you know, the Grim Reaper comes from. That when it comes time for us to die, there is a figure that will come over and will take us, hopefully in a lovingly way, or a loving way. Perhaps, on the other hand, it's a more violent way. And so whatever this thing was that you were contacting for the Ouija board, it does seem sensible that it may have actually been coming there to take your mother over to the other side. Now, whether or not your presence made a difference, who knows? But it's intriguing to me to think that your very energy there may have offset some balance that was necessary so that this thing could not access your mother. But in terms of the Ouija board itself, I've always felt that whatever happens in the Ouija board comes from within us, and the Ouija board is only a tool. And I know that at this point, George, you probably have even more opinions than anybody on the Ouija board after having researched it so thoroughly. But fortunately, I made it through my night alive. And you know what? The next night after that happened to me with the banging, I was completely prepared to document this again. I had all of my equipment set up in the right places and numerous cameras, and everything was ready to go. And the next night, it was so peaceful and serene. It was the most stable environment you could ever imagine. So it was there, and then it was gone. And apparently, whatever happened to you, Marie, it was there, and then it moved on to somebody else.
All right, International Line, where are you calling from? Hi there. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, where are you?
I'm in Canada.
You're in Canada. Well, go ahead with your question.
First of all, I'm European, and I have, I'm so upset, I'm sorry. I have a lot of knowledge and apparitions and blessings in my life.
Okay.
and I seen the Virgin Mary three times. When my brother died last year, she come to me 3 months ago, and she explained to me in 2011 the moon gonna go red. She say June 4, 2011.
That's my birthday.
Really? And June 4. And the 12 represents it represents as this is a seal shall be broken in the Revelation, the moon and the sun. And 12, verse 6, that's the 12. The 12 represents the Virgin Mary, because in Revelation, there's a broken seal with this. And this gentleman, I'm so sorry, George, I like you so much. He make me so upset. Real negative warlocks, I have seen them. They would not want to seek him out or even explain anything to him. They have no Bible. Their rituals are negative. People go to them and they ask for rituals to break somebody's marriage because they want their husband. I have spiritualists from Portugal who did first miracle at age of 8, still continuing to heal people with positive rituals.
Well, do you think maybe, and what's your name, by the way?
Evdokia.
Evdokia?
Eva.
Okay. Eva.
And this man...
do you think he was tricked by these people?
Yes. These people are not real.
Because I know Joshua. I know the guest. He's a good person.
I'm sorry. Because there's a lot of young people, and you don't understand. The negative demons, they want to trick people. And I tell you, I suffer very much in my life because they have been attacking me since the age of 18. I'm always paralyzed with my eyes open and I can't move.
Oh, gosh. All right, Joshua, let's let you react to Eva's thoughts that maybe you've been tricked by these people.
Oh, sure. Well, it is entirely possible. I mean, as I stated earlier, they said they would give me the opportunity to do this, to document what they do, and that's what I did. I documented what they showed me, but I have never proclaimed that they showed me the truth or they showed me everything. In fact, I'm sure they didn't. I mean, people are always on their best behavior, I suppose, when they're in front of a camera, at least when you're trying to represent an organization. So all I can provide is a glimpse, another piece of information. All I did was capture what they showed to me, and some of it some people would find very offensive, and some of it some people would find to be, truthful and exposing some aspect of life that is usually hidden. But I'm again not endorsing the Church of Satan. I don't. I'm not a Satanist. I disagree with them in many ways, as I've stated so far. But could I have been deceived? Absolutely.
See, I think they're a little more evil than you think.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but that's my take. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with us, Nick, out there in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Hi, George. I just wanted to agree with your guest on one of his views on shadow people. I do believe they are time travelers from the future, but I believe that the reason they look like shadows is because they're trying to influence their past. And with them trying to use the energy to influence their past, they come across as shadows because they're trying their hardest to exert their will to their history.
Well, we're close, Nick. We're close. You're Joshua. I think they're from another dimension, which could be a dimension of time.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and I can agree with that. It could be even a separate multiverse, a separate universe.
Yes.
But either way, they're crossing a divide, and they don't have enough power or, mental energy to basically form a conscious self and shell to interact with our world.
What do you think they want, Joshua, assuming they're crossing over?
Well, if they can only observe us, then they simply want to just see what happened in the past. But if they can actually manipulate what has happened, then I can envision a series of loops. This hypothesis that I alluded to earlier is called the paratemporal loop hypothesis. And I've never explained this at length, but I will sometime on another show if you'd like. But the idea being that knowing that beings that are intelligent enough to travel back in time would also probably eventually use that for self-serving purposes, it could be that once in a while the timelines are tweaked a little bit here and there. And there, you know, what you might pass through a timeline where there are flying saucers, and then 5 minutes later you're in a timeline where there aren't flying saucers, or you might pass into a timeline where there are, you know, Bigfoots running around. And when you look at these things we consider paranormal, time is the one consistent element between them all, because ghosts, we're talking about glimpsing something that had a relationship to the past, usually. UFOs, when they come around, say, a car, oftentimes the car will stop, and then when they fly away, the car starts up again. The person inside doesn't have to turn the ignition, so it's like time had stopped, but the consciousness is able to supersede that. You take these things like Bigfoot or Mothman, you know, somebody will see Bigfoot walking down a pathway, and all of a sudden he vanishes. That means he has changed his place, his space, and that means there is a manipulation of space-time. So all these things seem to be about time, and the idea of time being completely flexible, especially considering that a clock, say, in your attic runs faster than a clock in your basement, because the one in your basement is closer to the Earth's gravitational field, it shows you how flexible this stuff is. And I think that our brains are independent time machines, and as we live our lives, we experience a variety of time shifts, and in some of these loops, we have various paranormal phenomena, and others we don't.
Joshua Warren, my friend, joshuapwarren.com is his website, and also he's got the www.insidethechurchofsatan.com. Thanks, Joshua.
Hey, thank you, George.
For Karis Coburn, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.